Hello, America, and to our friends around the world, welcome to the Common Sense Show. And by the way, to our friends around the world, we're not going to be supporting you as much as you have been in the past, but we're still friends, right? Okay, good. Anyway, having said that, we are the show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. We're coming to you live from the Noble Gold Studios, and I'm going to tell you something. The banks can take your money. Dodd-Frank 2010, UCC, Section 8. Now, they're not taking it now because they're still making money off loaning it out. But when that house begins to crumble, and it already has started, they will hang on to your money and they legally can do it. So you need a strategy. Noble Gold has given me my strategy. They want to share it with you. And if you have a retirement associated with a bank, that is the most foolish thing that an individual can do, and they will straighten that out for you. All you got to do is call 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. 5347. If you forget the number, go to DaveHodgesGold.com and start the process there. But listen, I got to give you a disclaimer. The FTC wants me to tell you there's a risk in any investment. And past performance can't be construed with future expectation. Okay, we agree with giving the warning. Why isn't that over every door of every bank in America? I've been with Noble Gold for over 8 years. Again, DaveHodgesGold.com. Our guest is Matthew Dakin. He used to, I don't know if he still is. Matthew, welcome. Are you still a fireman?
No, I retired in 2018.
Okay. And I thought that's what Michelle told me. Michelle Melendez has introduced us, and you've heard Michelle on my show many, many times. We did a conference together last summer at Paul Preston's, New California. And she said, I know this guy. He's really cool. His name's Matt Dakin. And he's taken on a lot of interesting causes, and he's been a fireman. And she went through a whole detail. And I said, I think I'd like to talk to this guy. So, Matt, I want to welcome you to the show. And I think you're an example of someone who's been successful, did well in your career, advanced up to the level that you reached, and you're fighting for America. And I think that's really admirable. I'm not really sure where to jump in, except you have the most interesting story I've heard for a while about confronting a judge with your constitutional rights. So welcome to the show, but let's start off with that story.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate this platform.
Sure.
So the story was I've been learning about my rights and trying to exercise them because we only have the rights that we know that we have and that we're willing to exercise. And one of those, it's one of the trickier ones to navigate, which is the travel free without a license, because we do have a right to get from point A to point B without a license. And so I knew I was poking the bear when I did it, and I got a license plate, and it was probably one of the worst ones. It was the Gadsden flag. I stuck it on my car, and I had preempted this with letters asking and letting them know that I had a right to travel, an affidavit to the Secretary of State, to the CHP commissioner in California, that's a Highway Patrol commissioner, and several different agencies letting them know what I was doing. I never got anything from anybody. And so I did this, and I asked the Secretary of State if he had any ownership interest in my car because it had been registered and yada, yada, yada. So anyways, I put that plate on and it didn't take long because it was yellow with the rattlesnake and it said, "Don't tread on me." It didn't take long before I was pulled over. And so I was pulled over and then, stuck by the side of the road for quite a while. And I was exerting all my rights as one of the people. I let them know that I wasn't a quote unquote US citizen. I wasn't in their jurisdiction, but I could have been talking French to them because they didn't understand it. And I get it. And they were friendly. It was all fine. And they said, "Okay, well, here, we're going to do this. We're just going to get you a ticket and you'll be able to work it out in court." So then I filed a bunch of paperwork trying to abate it and everything was ignored. So I had a court date. I went there and probably 12 or more people with me. And they started calling everybody, and they got through everybody and saved me for last, which I figured they were going to do because I heard of similar stories.
Why would they do that? What's the strategy for saving you for last?
Because they do not want people seeing how this plays out. They don't want people to know that the jig is up. I mean, we're living in the Wizard of Oz. They don't want to see that it's just a man behind the curtain. That's what they don't want to see. And so there were a couple people that hadn't left from previous cases earlier, and the judge said, "Hey, you guys, if you're not part of this case, you can leave." And they stayed in there. So anyways, he calls my name up. I walk up And he says, just like he did with everybody else, okay, state of California versus Matthew William Dakin, okay, you have the right to this and the right to that, and started telling me the rights that I had. And I spoke up and I said, excuse me, Your Honor, I have not waived any of my inalienable rights that were given to me by my creator. I am here by special appearance only. I'm here due to threat, duress, and coercion. I look up and he had bolted out of the courtroom. So then I said, let the record show that the judge has left the courtroom. And I was going to say that I declared this case dismissed, but I didn't get it out because the bailiff had walked over and he shut off my microphone. And so then he told me, he said, sir, I'm going to have to ask you to sit back. You have to sit back down, or I'm going to have to ask you to leave. And so I thought, gosh, what should I do? So I sat back down. I thought, okay. And then about 2 minutes later, the judge comes walking in just as if nothing had happened. And then I said, oh, here we go, round two. Now this time the judge, same thing, and he just didn't stop talking, and he was talking loud, and he wouldn't let me. So he actually pleaded on my behalf. He entered a plea against what he is allowed to do, against his, he was legislating from the bench.
Yeah, that
So
is illegal. A
he said,
judge
I'm going to
cannot
enter a
enter your
plea for
plea.
you of not guilty and yada, yada, yada. And I said, hey, you're legislating from the bench. I do not consent to this. I'm here by special appearance only. But so what I learned there was how they work. They work through, they try to follow the rules. And most of the stuff that goes on is our voluntary consent, because it's everything is based on contracts. It's all commercial contracts. And all contracts are by consent. They're by agreement. And that's how everything works. And so most of the time, they don't have to be tyrannical. But in this case, this was the second time he knew not to let me get an edge word on, because it's audio. It's all taped on audio. It's all, they have the audio tapes. And I got it from the first time I was in there when he left the courtroom. And so this time he kept talking, and then he set a court date. So I ended up filing just judicial complaint against him, and I went to that my court date, and then the officer never showed up, so it was automatically dismissed.
Yeah,
But
by
that,
arrangement. But let me ask you this. What happened to your complaint?
oh, it's the fox guarding the chicken coop. It's the judicial review board is made up of retired judges, so it's all them covering for each other. And he said, well, we looked at your complaint, we heard it, because I sent him an audio and everything. And they said, well, we didn't find that he didn't, we didn't find anything to make us feel that he broke the law or whatever. And so it's so
Matthew,
that
wait,
part.
he violated your Fifth Amendment. He violated due process because you weren't allowed to enter your own plea.
I wasn't going to enter a plea if they first have to prove
Well, okay,
jurisdiction.
but he didn't allow you to even
Right. Oh, I
respond.
agree. I completely agree. I completely
Yeah.
agree. And it's one of those things where I'm working on some other things that are more important to me. And I could have put more into this. I had a fair amount of time because I had sent two affidavits to the officer that pulled me over for him to, basically one was what was of everything that happened there. And he held me there for 40 minutes. And the other one was basically a denial of corporate existence that I'm not one of their entities, because they write the ticket with it. We are all, in order to contract with the government, they have us as entities. And I let him know when he pulled me over, I am not under a license. I'm not using a license. There was no contract between me and that municipality in any way. And so I knew that, unfortunately, that's what success looks like, is them having the officer not show up, because they don't want this out. They don't want people understanding how all this really is. It's banking transactions when you go to court. There's the bid bond, performance bond, payments bonds. These are financial transactions that are going on. It's disguised as law and order and everything else. So, and they don't want people understanding how everything works.
Well, I agree with you, but Fifth Amendment was violated. And what was the other thing? Oh, you're talking now at the scene. It's an illegal detention because you're not allowed to detain someone any longer than it takes to write the summons.
Right.
And 40 minutes is excessive for something like that. Let me ask you just a couple of factual questions here about driver's license, proof of insurance, and I know you didn't get a license plate. So basically, enlighten my audience as to what your standing is with the state in regard to those items.
Well, I actually had a license, but I'm not using it. Okay. It's kind of like getting a contractor's license. You get a contractor's license, and then your neighbor asks you to help them on the weekend. for some private between you and your neighbor, and you can go over there and help them. And if the county shows up, you're not under your license. You're just helping a friend. You just because you have a driver's license doesn't automatically, all licenses are for commerce, all of them, even a Class C license, it's commercial. So when you have a driver's license, that's commerce. So you can have it, but not be using it. So I actually had it. I'm not, if I hand it to them, then it's implied that I'm using it. So I let them know I'm not under a license. I'm not using my license, just as if I had a contractor's
What about
license.
insurance? Do you have insurance?
Oh, I have insurance. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
But again, none of that is any of their, I was
I
in
agree.
talking in my private capacity.
That's right. It's a private agreement. I agree. And I think they're on thin ground. I'm surprised it hasn't got to the Supreme Court where they can force people to get private insurance. You're not allowed to, as government, to enforce a law like that. And I think it's totally unconstitutional. It's like DUI roadblocks. I mean, it's search and seizure without probable cause. But with regard to this whole situation now, I want to apply this so the audience can understand. Maybe we can turn America into an army of rebellious people against the contract system. You go in there and exactly what did you say? I'm here under what?
Well, I know what got him out. I'm here under special appearance, but
Special
I
appearance. Okay.
think that the key words I think were is I have not waived any of my inalienable rights given to me by my creator. Because there, it's all contract, it's all commerce, and the Declaration of Independence gives us inalienable rights, and we were born with inalienable rights, and it's not until we contract in that we lose those, that we give those away.
Have you produced any documents that you would sell or give away to people to tell them how to plead when they go into court?
No, I have not. I mean, I have a lot. I have a lot that I did. It just, there's so many different ways to go about this. There's a guy named Todd Duell, and it's Duehl or Duell. And I watched one of his videos recently, and he takes this a totally different way. He actually goes and asks for the bond and asks for the, and all that doesn't argue anything because, again, this is kind of going deep off the subject a little bit, but again, being we the people are the creditors of the nation. Everything works off of our credit. And these being transactions, they're basically stealing our money and they're creating bonds when you go to court. These are all they're creating bonds, they're dipping in. So just like when you go to apply for a loan, it's your signature that releases that credit. So that's really what's going on is with through these bonds with the court system. So I did my own thing. There's you look at in order to make a plea, you have to have a sworn, you have to know what the nature and the cause of the accusation is in order to make a plea. How do I plea when I haven't seen the nature and the cause of the accusation? You ask them that. They can't because these are all commercial activities, and they're not going to say that. They're not going to show that. So it's all just fraud. It's complete fraud what they're doing. And then you have a right to face your accuser, and there has to be an injured party. So when you're in common law, the problem, here's one of the problems. When you walk into their court, because these are all, everything's private, everything as government is disguised as government is all private. And you go in there, it's implied that you're under their jurisdiction just by going in there. It's like if you got a summons to go into Walmart court, and you went into Walmart court, well, it's implied that you're under their jurisdiction. So that's kind of the game that it's
That's why you had to
that
say you were there voluntarily.
under special
Special
appearance.
appearance. Okay. All right. I had an incident recently, so I'm going to ask you to advise me, one citizen to another, okay, one person to another, not legal advice. But I may have inadvertently run a red light. I made a bad judgment call. And I think it was photo radar. So I'm kind of waiting for the summons. So if you were in my place, okay, I can get the whole thing dismissed by going to some traffic court and paying whatever the fee is for that. But I'm almost of the mindset to go in and have fun with this and go to court. And so let me ask you a couple questions. One is I kind of get the idea about special appearance and what to say. And I'm here voluntarily under special appearance, but I have the right to confront my accuser. Where is it? Would you do that with photo red light?
Again, it's a little deeper than that because there's different layers to your freedom. And the one that I most so being a US citizen, okay, which I assume you are, which 99.9% of the Americans that live here are, you're actually government property. And I know that sounds crazy, but I can show you case law where you're government property because 14th Amendment, Congress created the US citizen. So you're actually their property. And then you got a license. And if you're under that license as government property, you're bound to all the rules and everything under of that license. So as a US citizen, it's harder to do these things. It's harder to say that you're outside of their jurisdiction. You can still probably possibly beat it, saying you have a right to face your accuser and where's the injured party and yada yada yada, but it's a much tougher road as one of their subjects as they see it. They see everybody as one of their subjects. And
Okay,
that's what's happened.
I see it. So if I make that argument, I want to face my accuser and where's the harm? I'm actually submitting to their system.
We're already all in their system until we've spent our lives telling them that we're one of their subjects. When we signed a driver's license to get our driver's license, we said we're a U.S. citizen. When we did a 1040, we said we're a U.S. citizen. And a U.S. citizen is a federal citizen. It's different than a state citizen, with all state citizens have their inalienable rights. That's talked about in the Declaration of Independence. But federal citizens don't. Federal citizens have civil rights that are granted by the government. The government grants you your civil rights as a statutory U.S. citizen. You are a federal citizen when you're a U.S. citizen. So you have to give them notice that you're no longer choosing because it's all voluntary. We volunteered in because we'll have a right to self-determination. So we have to volunteer back out of this system that's enslaved us through deception. We always thought it just meant we're Americans. No, you said you're a US citizen. Now you're saying you're government property. So that's the real key that I would like people to understand and how to go about fixing that. I mean, it's huge. It's huge deception. And that's why our government seems like it's not working for us, because it's not. It's a
It's always, yeah,
corporation.
no question it's not. You're raising an interesting point. With a federal ID now that's required to travel. Like actually, if you get in line at T at T TSA, okay, I'll get that.
Right.
That's a senior moment there. But if you get in line at TSA and you don't have your real ID, which is a federal ID card in effect, then they can fine you $45. Well, a federal ID is unconstitutional. Even under our existing laws, it's still unconstitutional. The idea of a license is a state matter, and they're usurping the 10th Amendment. And you're actually taking this into a different light now. Is it your position that you're not even subject to state control? And I think you're saying that for driver's licenses and so forth.
Unfortunately, it gets a little deep, but the states, every state had, there's two states. There's the states that exist, the 50 states of the union of states that exist. And then there's the states of, which are political subdivisions of the United States Corporation. And so all these are just corporations. State of California, State of Nevada are corporations. They have Dun and Bradstreet numbers. Okay. These are corporations. They're for-profit corporations. That's what they are. So they're not the real states. The republic still exists that was created, but it's vacant because everybody went over, got tricked over into becoming a quote-unquote federal citizen, a U.S. citizen. And guess what? Guess what the federal government's jurisdiction is? We'll go back to the Constitution, one of the founding documents. The Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 says Congress shall have exclusive legislation over 10-mile square area. Okay, that's it. And then areas ceded by the states for needful building, such as magazines, dockyards, ports, things like that. That is it. So, but if you identify as a federal citizen, even if you're in one of the states of the union, they still have control over you because you're one of their property. You're part of their property. So, I hope that explains a little bit, but this is.
Yeah, I got a better idea. There's a term I want to ask you about too that I've seen in use legally, and it's called sovereign citizen. Does that relate to what you're talking about?
That's an oxymoron, okay? To be, because you can't, it is, because you're either sovereign or you're a citizen. You can't be both. You're a citizen of something or you're sovereign. So, but that is a word that they've weaponized. for people that have actually taken, want to take their power back and becoming one of the people again, which we're
Yeah.
all supposed to be. When you want to be one of the people with inalienable rights given to you by your creator, as stated in the Declaration of Independence, and you want to cancel all these contracts that limit you to civil rights and whatever the government tells you you can do when you want to limit it, then they want to label you as a sovereign citizen. Well, you might as well call yourself a terrorist in their eyes, the way they look at that. And that's not a word you want to use. You can say sovereign, but I wouldn't use the word sovereign citizen. I actually, when I was in the fire department, I ran the hazmat team and for a while, and I used to go to these meetings with a lot of police officers. And it was the Northern California Regional Information Center, and they were talking about all these bad sovereign citizens out there. And so I have a certificate or like an 8-hour course of sovereign citizen extremism, you know, and they really vilify these people. And at the time I knew about the Federal Reserve and I knew about the fraud. I had already read the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, from like 20 something years ago. So I knew, and they were, so I always, it was really interesting hearing how they brainwashed the police officers. And they really, there was one video that they would show over and over about this father and their son and father and son, and they were sovereign citizens and they killed some CHP officer, which is terrible. And I'm all about following the law. I'm all about putting sunshine on everything, but they don't want that. And that's why they vilify anybody that actually wants to call things out. If you start showing them, the difference between the different, there's three different definitions of the United States, and you show them, yeah, United States, that's what they named this corporation that's located in DC. A great thing to look at is, if I can bring it up, is, Title 28, 1746, and it talks about unsworn declarations. Okay, and it tells you. So this is Title 28, 1746, and let me just. There's two ways to do unsworn declarations. Okay, the first one is if executed without the United States. Okay, and every time you see the word United States in any of their codes or statutes, just, it's usually talking about the corporation. So you can just substitute the word corporation. So it says, if executed without the United States, then you're right. I declare under penalty of perjury under the laws of the United States of America that the foregoing is true and correct, executed on such and such a date. And then, so that's your first choice. And then if it's executed within the United States, that's within the corporation, and its territories, possessions, or commonwealths, then you say, I declare under penalty of perjury that the foregoing is true and correct. And that's it.
Okay.
So that sounds maybe a little confusing,
A
but it.
little bit. So let me ask a question of clarification, just to make it simple. You don't refer to yourself as a citizen. What would be your status, your self-described status?
I am a California state citizen.
Okay. Okay.
I'm one of the people of California, California state citizen.
Matt, I agree with you. And let me tell you why I do. I'm of the camp that the states created the federal government to help coordinate.
Yep.
But the federal government should not have power over the states.
They don't. They have control over the state ofs. So they created the state ofs. And that's where the
I get
fraud
it.
is. That's where the fraud is. They created the state ofs. So the states are vacant, unfortunately. That's the problem. It's vacant. It's all there. That's why when you look at it like California, you have the 1849 Constitution and you have the 1879 corporate constitution. When you look in the 1879 corporate constitution, it talks about I forget the geographical boundaries or whatever can be found in the 1849 Constitution. That 1849 Constitution is still there, is still valid. It's just for the people, and the 1879 is for all the corporate subjects.
It's interesting, but I like I said, I think you're on very sound ground referring to yourself as a citizen of your state, because I think that preempts the federal. But I get what you're saying. They made the shift. How did they make the shift to where the states were sovereign and they created the federal government to where the federal government owns you?
This happened right after the Civil War. They had the Organic Act of 1871 when they created Washington, D.C., and was right after the Civil War. I'm not an expert on all this, but that's really everything happened right in the 1860s to the 1870s. 1866 with the 13th Amendment, 1868 with the 14th Amendment. And here's one for you. If you look carefully and you read the 14th Amendment and the 13th Amendment, if you look closely, you'll see the 13th Amendment, let me just show you, talks about their jurisdictions when it's talking about the United States. It's talking about their being United States being plural. And the 14th Amendment, it's talking about it, the jurisdiction thereof. Then they're talking about the corporate United States, the United States as the entity. So
Was it a
that's
legislative act, Matt?
what's that?
Well, in other words, when they did this 1871 conversion of power,
Yes.
was it a legislative act? Is that what's written into the 14th Amendment? Because I'm not familiar with it if it is.
Well, that's when they created a whole new constitution. That's when they created the corporate constitution, and it's the constitution of the United States, which is of the corporation versus the 1787 constitution for the United States, the country. In 1871, they created, again, this is how tricky they are. This is how tricky they are. They created a corporation called the United States, and they created a constitution for that corporation. And it was the constitution of that corporation. They kept everything else identical. Pretty much everything else is identical. It's just they changed the for to the of. That's what we've been tricked.
Okay, I've pulled up the 14th Amendment here, and I've taught enough government in my previous days that I'm very familiar. Usually, 14th Amendment today is equal protection. In other words, if you have a cover charge on a bar, you can't charge white people less than you charge black people, for example, equal protection. I'm very familiar with that, and I'm looking at this here, citizenship clause. Defines national and state citizenship for all persons born or naturalized in the U.S. But it's very vague.
So may I add something that might help clear this up?
Sure.
I have a fourth edition Black's Law Dictionary. Okay, a revised Black's Law Dictionary.
Okay.
When I look up the word "person" in that dictionary on page 1299 of the fourth edition, it says corporations are quote persons as that word is used in the
Got it.
first clause of the 14th Amendment. So
Well,
when it says all persons born, it's really saying all corporations born or naturalized. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but that's in black and white, right out of Black's Law Dictionary.
that's how corporations have the standing of a person too in law.
Yeah.
Okay, here's what I found in the 14th Amendment. I think this validates what you're saying. Incorporation doctrine applied most of the Bill of Rights to the states. Notice the choice of words, most. Not just the federal government significantly expanding civil rights, but then they went on to use the word incorporation. And there is the rub. They don't, I'm looking at Google on this, but I'm looking here at, they're trying to create the impression that this expands civil rights, like under Brown versus Board of Education. They
So
cite
I've got
this.
case law here that shows that once you identify as a 14th Amendment U.S. citizen, you no longer have access to the first 10 amendments of the Constitution because you're not one of the people anymore. You are a corporate subject. You're an entity created by Congress. So you no longer have, that's why you have to, that's why the Second Amendment shall not be infringed doesn't apply to U.S. citizens.
Matt, I'm going to take this a step further too. I'm very concerned about 15-minute cities and social credit, the digitization of our money, and real ID, digital ID, all of this system into 15-minute cities. If this interpretation is exactly what the courts would hold, then when they put you in these 15-minute cities and digitize everything, all properties digitized too under this, then you have no rights. You own nothing. And the World Economic Forum proclamation of you'll own nothing, it actually fits.
That's why I'm doing everything I can we can only fix it if we understand to get to the root of it. And what they've done to us, turning us into corporate subjects underneath them, they've done the same thing to our property. If you go look at whatever property you have, originally there was a land patent to that property.
Exactly.
And right on that land patent, it says it was granted from whatever president was at the time to a certain person. And to a certain man or woman, probably man, and to their heirs and assigns forever. And that's based on, like here in California, probably in Arizona too, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. And so to the heirs and assigns forever, that has not gone away. And so that is valid. But again, everything is commercialized. Nothing looks the same. They've taken everything and they've gotten us to agree that we are tenants, joint tenants in common. What's a tenant? It's a renter. Yeah. And that's why we pay property tax every year. They've created, these fictitious documents. And that's why we have to understand the game that's being played. And, that's why I've taken my land patent. I've brought it forward, done the full chain of title, and they wouldn't record it in my county. I got it recorded in Montana. In Article 4, Section 1 of the Constitution says all each state shall recognize the records from every other state, basically, but they ignore all of it. So, but we have to understand this. We have to understand what they're doing, what they've done, and that we only have the rights that we're going to exercise and stand up for and that we know about. And we, the people, are in charge. We have the power. We just have to understand how they've tricked us, how they've tricked us with all this. And so we need to come together and take back our power and learn this information because.
By taking back your power, do you mean that we have to extricate ourselves from that provision of the 14th Amendment and go back to 1787? And would it take a legal action, like an amendment to the Constitution, a congressional law? How would that happen?
No, it's really simple. It's actually really simple. We all have a right to self-determination. Like I said, those documents, when you look up the codes and statutes at large, you look at the statutes at large, it'll have the Articles of Confederation. It has the Declaration of Independence. It has the Constitution because they're all still the founding documents. In the Constitution, it talks about unlimited right to contract. It shall not be impaired. The impairment of an obligation will not be, they can't mess with that. Well, they've tricked everybody into this contract with this corporation called United States. So it's just all by consent. They've tricked us into this. That republic still exists. So how to get out of it? We all have a right to self-determination. We volunteered in. All contracts have to be voluntary. We can volunteer back out. We can volunteer back out. We just send a letter to the notice of a notarized notice, an affidavit form to this U.S. Secretary of State saying, hey, I'm choosing to no longer be a 14th Amendment underneath the government. I'm choosing to be one of the people of my state with inalienable rights given to me by my creator. I mean, it basically can be pretty much that simple when it's notarized an affidavit. And then from that point on, understand how the adhesion contracts that we've signed and how we've gotten in and how they're very tricky at how they try to get us into their system, in their web. And getting out of it. And that's what we have to do. This is all contract and they're less tyrannical than it seems because they're more deceptive because most of what we've done to get in here is through our ignorance and all their deceptive ways and all their word games and trickery that have enslaved us into this system, not knowing what it means, not knowing what U.S. citizen means.
And the timing of this 1871 is very telling, because you said the phrase after the Civil War, and this makes perfect sense since they wanted to strip the South of states' rights, which was their argument to separate from the Union. That makes a lot of sense. So yeah, the timing explains a lot. And I wanted to make a comment here too. You mentioned property tax, and a lot of people don't know this when you tell them this, that property tax is one of the founding pillars of Marxism, of communism. Marx talks about property tax. People should never own anything. The state can partner with you, and they are. If you pay off your home but don't pay your property tax, they take your home. So yeah.
100% agreed. 100% agreed. This is where they're going. And unless if we don't understand this and start taking actions to take back, come together and take back our power and take back our rights, it's really our rights that we've given up through our ignorance, not knowing what things mean, not knowing the words, not understanding. Thinking, but the Republic is still there. That's why the court judge ran out. As soon as I told him, I have not waived any of my inalienable rights given to me by my creator, his jurisdiction was gone. So they are following rules. That's the good part. They're following rules. Most of what they're doing to us is through our contracting in unknowingly, through their deception, their word games, and not knowing what things mean.
There's more to this than meets the eye. I'm going to share this with you because it's something that I've been talking about. I first talked about this 15 years ago, and now it's really kind of come to a maturity point. There are basically two New World Orders. There is the old style, and what you're referring to is the from the bar, okay, which is British controlled originally. You've got the old money in Europe, the Rothschilds, the Bank of London, and so forth like that. And then you've got the big tech. They're the new kids, the new money on the block. And Trump is identified with Silicon Valley, Peter Thiel, that group. And he's taking on the British Empire, which wants an invasion of Russia, which wants to put nuclear weapons inside Ukraine. And so Trump is resisting that. On one hand, you're going to get support from Trump in your position. But here's what scares me. These big tech guys are digitally oriented. And what scares me is the natural outgrowth of this is 15-minute cities.
So I'm not sure the natural outgrowth of what is 15-minute cities.
Okay, 15-minute cities, basically, you can't travel more than 15 minutes from your home. They define where you live. You won't own an automobile. You rent your possessions. You do not own them. They determine caloric intake. I mean, it gets pretty radical. In fact, actually, some of these things are in effect in Birmingham, England, where they're actually experimenting with this. And it's very authoritarian. You can't have a savings account 30 days sunset on your savings. They'll take it and use it if you don't spend it. They can tell you what you can and cannot spend your money on. It gets very autocratic. Now, I don't know how, I'm not saying the Trump administration is going to go for the full boat, but you've got these digital monarchs, like Peter Thiel and the rest of these guys, Sam Altman, and they are opposed to the British Rothschild Empire. And that's who's been basically causing all the wars and so forth. And here come the new kids on the block. And they're usurping, and Trump aligned with them because it was the old money that defeated him in 2020. And so now we've got this clash of powers going on. I'm going to refer you to a website and to my audience too. There's a website out there called Promethean, and these ladies do an unbelievable job of laying this out, and the history is unmistakably accurate. And I've experienced this firsthand too. Let me share with you how I got into this business real quick. I was a college basketball coach. I was teaching my psychology classes, and my wife had retired because she was a big corporate executive. She wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. So we moved to what we thought would be our retirement home in northern Maricopa County in a rural area. And all of a sudden, John McCain and Ted Kennedy and the Central American Free Trade Agreement came to town. And they said, oh, now you should never have been allowed to build there. And we're going to take your property rights away and eventually erode them to the point where we didn't own the property. And then they'd just come and swoop it up for nothing. It wasn't eminent domain. They just wanted to steal it from us. We had an 8-year legal battle with the McCain forces. Eventually, we won because we got Clint Bullock of the Goldwater Institute, who was headed to the Arizona Supreme Court, to side with us with some Arizona legislators. And I started doing radio appearances across the country, and that's how I ended up doing what I'm doing today. That was the impetus that pushed me into this. But here's what the McCain people told me at a meeting at our state capitol in Arizona. They said, we're giving you a courtesy by being here. We don't even have to talk to you. If we want your property, we can, quote, damn well take it. And you better shut up and accept what we tell you. And that's basically a verbatim quote. So what you're talking about here matches my life experience, where you own nothing because you're in their system.
So this is why everything, again, it starts to getting to the root of the problem. All the stuff you're talking about, I agree, that's what they want, and that's what will happen if we stay underneath them. We are their boss once we decide, once we give notice that we're no longer one of their subjects. But as long as we continue to say we're a 14th Amendment U.S. citizen and vote and register and everything, it's a corporation and we're registering under that. We're putting ourselves under that. We're saying we're that. Then they have the power. We're feeding this. We're feeding this beast system that we don't like. We are contributing to our own enslavement. And how do we stop? We stop. You know, it's like when you're in a hole, the first thing you do is put the shovel down. Okay, the first thing we need to do to stop doing this is stop contributing. How we are contributing and what how we are is we're enabling this beast system to exist by funding it, by feeding it, and being a part of it. And so we have to opt out of it. This is a private corporation that came in and tricked everybody into joining it. And I know this sounds crazy, but it's all documented. I've got pages of documentation. They'll back everything I'm saying up. And we have a right to self-determination. We can be one of the people. We just have to say it and get it on the record. And so to override everything we've ever said under penalty of perjury our whole life before this, that we're a U.S. citizen. All we have to do is say, hey, oops, I was tricked into that. I didn't realize that. I choose to be one of the people of Arizona with all my inalienable rights given to me by my creator, as stated in the Declaration of Independence, if you want, however you want to word it. Get that on record. And going forward, if enough people do that and come together and get out of it, they have no power because everything is contract, everything. But when they came in, McCain came in, yeah, you're a corporate subject. You're their property. Of course, they can take your property. Of course, they can do whatever. They can do anything they want to their own citizens because you're their subjects. And that's what I hopefully people understand. We don't have to be their subjects. They are our servants. They're our public servants. It says right in the Declaration of Independence, we establish governments to secure our rights. That's the whole point, is to secure our rights, not to lord over us. And all those founding documents are still there. When you look up, go look up statutes at large and look at the top of Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation, because they're all used. That's all valid. But if we don't, if we decide to become a U.S. citizen underneath them, we've contracted, we've agreed to that through deception, not knowing what it means, then we have no one to blame but ourselves. So
Well, they're
that's why.
afraid you're going to find out. I was involved in what I think was child abduction from the rightful mother with no proof of wrongdoing, no allegations of wrongdoing. And because she stood up to some interests in Fort Collins that weren't, let's say, constitutional, they took her kid from her and gave it to the father who never was in the kid's life. And they did it to punish her. And when she went to court, they declared her to be a sovereign citizen and wouldn't hear her case. And I was involved in this as media. I mean, I exposed this nationwide. And so what you're talking about, I have seen.
I agree. There's a lot of, and there's no shortcuts with this. That's why you need to go. If you're going to do it, you do it with the Secretary of State. You have it notarized, affidavit style. You can't just say it and it makes it good. And you have to be careful. I can, I have, there's groups that I listen to, other like-minded people. And there was a gal who had done it, who had done exactly what I'm saying and given notice. And she had her 16-year-old runaway. And she was fighting CPS. CPS took her and she showed them that, nope, you have no jurisdiction. I'm not a US citizen. I'm one, you know, and they gave her kid right back to her. So they
Can they
have all
deport
about
you?
jurisdiction.
If you declare you're not a citizen, can they actually deport you?
No, you're not a citizen of that corporation.
But
You're
you're
one
a
of the
citizen of
people.
your state. Okay, I get it.
Yes,
I
yes,
get it.
yes. It's this corporation, the corporation that's limited to that 10-mile square area or other areas ceded to it
Okay.
for needful buildings, forts, yada, yada. They've through deception, they act like they're this huge, you know, it was us agreeing and going along with it. It's so I'm an American. I am a California state citizen. So
You know what you're telling me? The actions of the judge that you encountered, he's fully aware of this situation, which is why he acted the way he did.
yep.
How many do you think all judges are aware of this?
No, they're not. They're not. Yeah, no, they're not at all. Especially the lower, because they're not real judges. These are not real judges. They're all administrators or, you know, magistrates. They're not real judges. We don't have real judges. It's all just private. Everything's private. These are private courts doing commerce. It's all commerce. So, but it's all commerce. It's all based on contracts. And you realize, oh, there's no contract, and you could be liable. That's why he ran out of the courtroom. He didn't want you'd be liable for breaching your oath of office, you know. But if you have somebody in there that's one of your citizens, that's you know, and by him saying that, okay, you have a right to this. If I don't object, then I've just agreed. These are my rights. I'm putting myself under him when he's telling me what my rights are. It's
Is
like,
the birth
whoa.
certificate part of this process?
100%, 100%. That was after the bankruptcy in 33 when the corporation went bankrupt and they confiscated the gold that gave you $20 an ounce. And a couple of years later, they allowed you to buy it back at $35 an ounce.
Yeah,
Well,
exactly. Yeah.
that same time period is when here, I've got a great thing that'll go into the answer this question. But yes, the birth certificates are basically we're chattel to them. Okay. And the birth certificates are just the receipt. So this was a conversation. I don't know if it was a letter, but it was basically, this was conversation that Edward Mandelhouse had with Woodrow Wilson. And listen to this. This goes right into this. Said, very soon, every American will be required to register their biological property in a national system designed to keep track of the people, and that will operate under the ancient system of pledging. By such methodology, we can compel people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for our fiat paper currency. Every American will be forced to register or suffer being able to work and earn a living. They will be our chattels, and we will hold the security interest over them forever by operation of law or law merchant under the scheme of secured transactions. Americans, by unknowingly or unwittingly delivering the bills of lading, quote unquote, birth certificate to us, will be rendered bankrupt and insolvent, secured by the pledges.
This is Mark of the Beast stuff.
They will be stripped of their rights and given a commercial value designed to make us a profit, and they will be none the wiser, for not one man in a million could ever figure out our plans. And if by accident one or two should figure it out, we have in our arsenal plausible deniability. After all, this is the only logical way to fund government, by floating liens and debts to the registrants in the form of benefits and privileges. This will inevitably reap us huge profits beyond our wildest expectations and leave every American a contributor to this fraud, which we will call, quote, social insurance, unquote. Without realizing it, every American will unknowingly be our servant, however begrudgingly. The people will become helpless and without any hope for their redemption. And we will employ the high office, which is the presidency, of our dummy corporation, USA, to foment this plot against America. So they've been quite successful.
I am almost speechless because this is Mark of the Beast stuff. When those first few sentences you read from Mandel House, that is Mark of the Beast stuff. We own you. And you know where we just heard this? With Steamer in the UK when he made the speech to Parliament and he said, "You will not work without this ID." The same thing right there.
But if we become private, then I can have a private transaction with you. And if I'm private and I'm not one of their subjects, one of their citizens, you and I can interact as much as we want. If we were neighbors, I could sell to you, you could sell to me, or we would live close by, we could do whatever and support each other. And the government would have zero claim over any of it, as long as we have let them know, send them an affidavit claiming that we are no longer one of their subjects. And we
You
have
know,
no.
you brought up Executive Order 6102, which was the gold confiscation of Roosevelt. And I don't, and people willingly complied. They didn't have to really go arrest anybody for this. And I think they didn't care about the few that didn't comply. But what's interesting is Trump has just done the same thing with Bitcoin. The door is open to confiscate Bitcoin. I don't think that's Trump's mindset. I think this is something that was put in without his approval. That's my guess, because it runs contrary to what he says. But having said that, if they can take your Bitcoin and they take Bitcoin with stablecoin and the dollar as one entity, okay, now they back it with gold. Now they've attached gold. They could do the same thing again that 6102 did. This is something that I've looked at pretty closely.
So again, it is all for U.S. citizens.
Yeah, I agree. I hear you.
So that's a, yeah.
But we're in the minority. I mean, people that declare would be in the minority, and it's easier to use force against the minority, illegitimate force, than it would be if everyone knew their rights and said, "I'm not part of the system."
I completely agree, but you, I mean, you can stop being a corporate citizen, a federal citizen, and still interact and still do a lot of things, and not have it be too detrimental. I mean, if you looked at just like an Internal Revenue Code, you look up their definitions, look up, it's 26 CFR 7701. That's for the definitions. You know, to start looking up the definitions of United States. That means a District of Columbia. What's a state? What's a state mean? It's the same thing, District of Columbia. It's all right there in plain sight that we don't even understand. And what, you know, I've got the definitions of the United States. It's a federal corporation that's located in D.C. I mean, this is all stuff and right in their own statutes where they show it, but people don't understand it. And that's why like I showed you, the unsworn declaration
You
within the
know,
United States or without.
there's something else I want to bring into this, and it was passed under Obama, and they didn't even let Congress look at it. They just had one congressman look at it and recommend it up or down. And it was the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It was disguised as a free trade bill, and it had some free trade elements in it. But at the heart of it was this, I believe it was a 22-person I might be wrong on the number, but I'm close, a 22-person panel that could override everything the Supreme Court, Congress, and the president could do. When Trump came into office in 2017, he killed it immediately before it could take effect. But what's really interesting about that is you're making this corporation argument, and I'm thinking, how the heck could TP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, do this? Well, I think we just answered the question. Corporate controls corporate.
Yep. Yeah. That's all this is. That's all these are. These are just a bunch of corporations disguised as legitimate government. And I guess if we give it legitimacy, then I guess that there's probably no difference, but we don't have to. We don't have to give it legitimacy. We have a choice. It's our government if we want it to be or not, if we don't want it to be. It's a private corporation. Who owns these corporations? These are corporations. These are all corporations. That it's all been fraud, deceptive. I mean, it's all deceptive, and it's not as tyrannical. Like I said, we can get out of it. We can get out of it. We can get out of the corporation. We can, they'll leave us alone once we're out of it. But they're gonna try and find ways to keep us in if they can. But they, once you're out, you're out. They do follow the rules. They're tricky and they're deceptive and in a lot of ways. So you have to make sure that you're not leaving any way for them to claim jurisdiction over you. But once you're out, you're out. So they are following their rules.
You need to do a podcast.
Well, I need to do whatever. I mean, this is to me, this is so important. This is the most important thing because as long as it's like slaves on the plantation in the 1850s wanting to rebel when you have a chance. Hey, you can go over here, and the government said the governor's going to sign your freedom papers over here, and you'd be much better fighting the system as a freed slave than a or a non-slave, somebody that's freed, that's emancipated, versus still on the plantation. And the American people, a lot of them are upset with what's going on. They're still the subjects of the corporation without inalienable rights, without the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third Amendment, without all these things, and they're not knowing why. And why does the judge say, don't bring up the Constitution in this court? Well, because it has nothing to do with the court. It's an administrative court. It's contract. It's based on contracts, and the Constitution allows for unlimited contracting. That's why. But people don't understand the game that they're in, what's being played. So we don't belong in those courts when we're one of the people. They're not our courts.
Now, you're explaining it very well, but I'm going to encourage you to find ways to disseminate. Today, the easiest way to do it is to start a podcast.
Okay, well, thanks. I may do that. I mean, I'm still got my own issues that I'm dealing with. Like I said, I'm dealing with a land patent issue with my county that I've been dealing with for 5 years, and I just recently blew it up. So it's like, because when you find the original land patent where it says to heirs and assigns forever, and I have the full chain of title up to me, and there's only like seven or eight people in that chain. Between the original grantee or grant yeah grantee and myself. But I've so I've retyped the whole thing in a much larger font so you can see really clearly, and I'm asking them again,
Yeah.
but they're corporate entities, and they can't really deal the government can't deal with a live man or a woman, and that's part of the problem. And
I
so
get the, I get what you're saying there, but so are you able to not pay property tax?
Well, I've offered for 5 years and I haven't paid for 5 years. As long as I just answer these questions for me, it just, and I'll pay. Show me, because all taxes are actually voluntary, and because you have to volunteer in, they're all commercial. Taxes are commercial. So if I were starting a business here on the property, yeah, and I that's a privilege. It says right in the you go in the Constitution, you start looking up the taxes and what's taxable. They're ad valorem taxes, excise taxes for some sort of privilege. There is zero privilege. We have a right to own property, and that's in the
Sure.
Constitution. But if you have you can't tax a right, unless I'm doing more than just owning property. If I'm wanting to have a business on the property and asking for a license, yeah, then I need to pay taxes
Sure.
based on that.
I get that. Matt, we're flat out of time. In fact, actually, we're over time, but I wanted to let this go on because I think it's really an important issue. You decide to do a podcast, let me know, and I'm sure Michelle will help you. I'll help you. Because this information needs to get out, but expect resistance. Our guest has been Matthew Dakin, retired fireman. You are a captain, if I'm not mistaken, right? Yes, and that's what Michelle told me. And he's got some interesting takes on the status of our government, and I think it's worth all of us looking into. Matthew, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.